The following is a CNA podcast.
Welcome back to The Climate Conversations. I'm Jamie Ho. I'm going to talk about electricity this week and an announcement last week that Singapore will start a two-year trial to import electricity from Malaysia. Is this a game changer in terms of how Singapore generates its electricity? Does it fundamentally alter Singapore's energy landscape and how much energy we use that's devoted to the generation of electricity? At a higher level then, as we look even bigger picture, how might all this work towards our carbon emissions profile? With me to discuss this is Dr. Philip Andrew Speed from the Energy Studies Institute at NUS. He was formerly a professor of energy policy at the University of Dundee. Philip has been in the field of energy and resources for nearly 40 years and has recently begun to focus on energy challenges in Southeast Asia. Philip, welcome and thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Let me just jump straight to the first question. As it stands, we already import natural gas, which is what powers electricity generation here in Singapore. So when a country like us, we start talking about importing electricity, what's the biggest thing that excites you?
Well, I think the first thing was that it will be renewable, clean electricity. For a country that cannot generate much of its own renewable and clean electricity, that's really good news. And if one looks forward, this amount of clean electricity will increase, and therefore it will help Singapore meet its climate change goals. So this is just the first step. So that's the first thing that struck me. The second thing, and I've been watching for some years now here in Southeast Asia, is this idea of developing a multilateral electricity market across ASEAN. Mm-hmm. And so this is just another micro step towards that bigger vision that has been lingering in the region for many years.
This thing with Malaysia obviously is a trial, as you say, and it's a small step in sort of figuring out how Singapore would do that. What's the difference in terms of we do import natural gas as it stands now, and as a country which imports natural gas now is going to import electricity as well, as you say, hopefully renewable energy. But what are the calculations there? Is it really a realistic thing that countries aspire to? Looking again at how other countries have done it, as you say, ASEAN is now trying to do some, hopefully we get to a multinational, multilateral grid. But what examples do we have out there that sort of have positive things that we can learn from?
Looking elsewhere in the world, Europe has a relatively unified electricity market. But if we just look at the Nordic countries, they can move clean energy from one place to the other. Or if one country is short of energy because maybe there's a drought in Norway, they don't have enough hydro, they can import nuclear power or thermal power from another country. And again, it's if there's a sudden crisis in one country, another country can help back it up. So it's security of supply and it's environmental as well.
The key thing, though, is that you hope to be importing clean energy then, right? It's unclear how far down the road ASEAN is. Are you optimistic in that?
Well, I think if we just look at Singapore first, this initiative to buy electricity from Malaysia is part of this larger plan that's already starting to work to import hydroelectricity from Laos into Thailand and eventually to Malaysia. Okay, and this is already happening. This was a plan that was dreamt up by the four countries, including Singapore, back in 2013. So Singapore is now joining this initiative. It's a tiny amount of electricity, but the concept is as the system starts to work, as there is more confidence, and as more dams are built in Laos, then more hydroelectricity can flow through the system down to Malaysia and Singapore.
That's a good point because, again, Malaysia probably isn't the big prize, so to speak, inverted commas, and Laos and hydro there. But people talk about Australia as well. Can you explain the reality and is it really something that could happen in the future?
Well, there is a company, a Sun Cable, set up to make it happen. And they have their Southeast Asia office is here in Singapore. So the idea is that Northern Australia has huge amounts of sunshine. So you could build vast solar farms there. You then have the not simple task of building a 4,500 kilometre underwater cable through a zone of earthquakes, volcanoes, and very deep water through to Singapore. So whilst the Laos is really the first option that can be developed relatively quickly, the Australian option will really only open in the second half of the 2020s, I think. And that's assuming all goes well.
That's still quite soon.
It's still quite soon, but I mean, let's see. Grand projects have a habit of encountering problems, whether they be financial or technical or just geological.
I've been trying to sort of picture in my head how the cabling is going to be done, as you say, over that kind of expanse of space and water. Is there any sort of international precedence that one can look at to say, hey, actually, this might work?
Given the distance, I don't think is necessarily the issue. I think it's tough terrain, volcanoes, earthquakes, tsunamis, underwater slides of material in the trench in front of Indonesia, and very deep waters. Mm. So this will be one of the greatest challenges for underwater cables.
Yeah. Again, going back to Malaysia just for a little bit, obviously the talk is that this is a trial for especially the authorities in Singapore to learn a little bit about what it means to import electricity. One of the things which you learn about from Europe is the issue about security as well, the security of supply. What other lessons do you think are the main ones that Singapore is probably going to want to take from this two-year trial that's supposed to be with Malaysia?
Integrating two grids is a complex challenge.
Yeah.
There are technical issues to make sure your grids work together, things like frequency of electricity and all sorts of technical things like that. You need management systems to make sure that the dispatchers and managers on each side are working together and not against each other. Mm. You need a commercial platform so that the electricity can be sold and everybody is trusting the commercial platform. You need contracts. You probably need a treaty maybe to cover it, but maybe not in the short term. And you need trust. So I think it's a very good idea to start very small. You can sort out some of the basic stuff. Once it gets bigger, it's got to get a lot more sophisticated. But it gives a trial period. And if there are difficulties along the way, the lights don't go out. That's the key. So if suddenly one day it's not working very well, then fine. We just stop, we sort out the problem, and we turn it on again.
Mm. Is the example of Europe, and Europe is quite a small landmass comparatively, is that a realistic benchmark that we hope ASEAN could get to as well?
Geography is against you in some of ASEAN. I mean, Indonesia has 30,000 islands or whatever, and the Philippines, etc. But there's certainly no reason why what might call peninsula ASEAN, with the Mekong, Thailand, Myanmar, down to Malaysia, Singapore, and even over to Sumatra and Java, I don't see why those islands couldn't be. I mean, there are connections already, but it's not complete yet. Even some of the most basic connections are not there, or if they are, they're very small. But there's no reason why you shouldn't get the ASEAN power grid in place. And that has been a vision for more than 25 years now. This is not new. But the problem, and it's the same problem as Europe had actually, is to put in place the commercial incentives for grid companies build the wires. And this has been the problem in ASEAN, and even 3 or 4 years ago was a problem in Europe for certain connections.
Mm. Looking at a source as large as Laos, for example, in hydro there, if you were a policymaker in Singapore and you're looking at that as a source, what kind of percentage or what bulk of your energy or electricity needs would you want to be importing from an outside source like that?
There are two or three things to think about. You need at least enough of your own electricity, at least to start with, or at least you can get maybe not the peak load, but you've got your own base load. I think in the longer term, you want another source of imports. And this is where Australia comes in. The idea of the Australian connection makes the connection with Laos more acceptable. Yeah, because it means that if for some reason there is a problem with our neighbor to the north and the power doesn't come through, or there's a technical problem there, you know, the grid has a problem, or there's a drought in Southeast Asia and the Mekong River is not flowing, or for whatever reason, then you've got the Australian option. If you're importing, if you're relying on imports, you need two options.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the difference between electricity and gas in Singapore's case is that Singapore imports by ship, LNG. It can import from anywhere at any time within reason.
And, which complements what we get from Malaysia and Indonesia as well.
Yes, well, yeah. it now far exceeds. Mm-hmm. And there is now a spot market in LNG. So I won't say at a day's notice, but a few weeks' notice, you can call up a new ship to deliver mm-hmm. if the supplier lets you down. With electricity, it's through wires. Mm-hmm. And there is no yet global shipborne spot market for electricity.
Yeah. Are there international treaties or agreements that govern the treatment of the wires that flow through international waters, for example, then?
Not that I know of, because it's going to go from Australia to Indonesia, so there would have to be... I mean, there are treaties, but there's no global governance regime that I'm aware of. So there'd be a treaty Indonesia, Australia, Indonesia, Singapore, Singapore, Australia. So there'll be a triangle of treaties there, I would imagine, yes.
The thing, as I start to conclude this really fascinating conversation, is if you look at Singapore, and we've always come to accept that when it comes to alternative energies and clean energies, we're sort of disadvantaged compared to other people, and we're a small island nation. We don't have access to whether it's hydro, as you say, or even solar is not going to be a very big percentage of that. Are there examples of countries that are similar to us, which have managed to transcend this via the import route of their electricity, whether or not it's somehow or other via land, maybe in Europe, or other islands as well? Because it sounds like a pie in the sky, but it's actually quite realistic. But I wonder whether there's a picture that we can paint to, hey, look, they've done it before, and Singapore can aspire to do that as well.
Well, if one looked at Europe, countries like Luxembourg, you would have to choose as almost probably greatly reliant on electricity and gas coming from neighbours. But, I mean, a larger example would be Japan. Almost entirely, if you ignore the nuclear, hugely dependent on coal, oil and gas being imported. And it has had a thriving economy. So just because you're reliant on imports doesn't mean that your economy suffers. In fact, if you were to do a graph the other way round, many very resource-rich countries are not very rich economies. So it puts the pressure on you to run your economy well. There's no harm, at least from historical examples, of being an energy importing country.
Last question. As we have suggested earlier on in this conversation, some of the electricity that we're going to be able to import will help Singapore meet its targets as far as the ones that we've committed to international climate change negotiations, the Paris Agreement. Hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later. But if we look into the future, and again, your advice to Singapore policymakers, there will be some hedging of bets, obviously, as we suggest, that you want to keep your sources open, whether it's electricity or natural gas. What are the calculations that you would consider in terms of how much electricity do you want to import versus keep importing the natural gas? And what's the mix going to be?
Well, you will need gas for certain industrial processes anyway. So, I mean, I wouldn't want to come to a number, but I think you're building your renewable capacity. Solar might be 7% of electricity supply in 10 or so years' time. Energy efficiency is going to be important. My guess, the structure of the economy will change.
Hopefully, yeah.
So I think, yes, diversify. So continue to have gas imports, have the most efficient power generation plants that you can get. Bring in as much hydro as you dare from the north and the south. And picking up on a conversation that is already out there, keep the option open for nuclear power. As technology develops, small-scale reactors, offshore reactors or whatever, you know, this is a conversation that is going on today, not just here, but in other countries. So come back in 20 or 30 years, the mix may be greater than we would imagine today.
Since you mentioned nuclear, that therefore, as you suggest, shouldn't be taken off the table entirely.
That is the government's official position. Technologies are advancing, completely different technologies from what we see today. And we just got to wait and see, do they work? Are they cost effective? Are they safe? And do they preferably not produce any waste? So once we've got answers to these questions and Singapore's let some other country try them out, then the government may decide to give it a go.
Thank you very much, Philip.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The Climate Conversations. This podcast is part of CNA's broader coverage of climate change. You'll find all our content on cna.asia. Head to the orange bar that says Climate Change. You can also find this and other CNA podcasts on our website, app, and on iTunes and Spotify. The team behind this podcast are Crispina Robert, Lin Su Ling, and Erin Low. This podcast was also recorded on Sennheiser. And I'm Jamie Ho. Till next week.